The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
And down the stairs he strides, slowly, purposefully, knowing that he controls all as far as he can see. And I think he's standing by right now.
Good evening, Jeff. So nice to see you again. Come in, please come in.
Thank you. I just came from the blood bank. I hope that's all right. I made a donation. I'm a little weak.
You might be a little short. Maybe you'll have to come back next week, too.
An invitation? Oh, how nice.
Oh, nice.
I accept. The usual dinner?
Hear the children of the night.
I hear them.
They welcome you, too. It's the one-year festival of the Jeff and Brad Art and Short Ghost Story Contest. I can hardly wait.
Well, you got up early. I know. It's very nice of you.
Just so how are you?
How am I? Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say I'm still alive and still here to enjoy another Halloween evening with you, sir.
Goodness, that sounded kind of dire.
Well, I mean, all things considered, I could have been visiting Fukushima when it went up.
We all say a prayer.
Oh, we better.
Yeah, we do. We do. You may recall that our youngest daughter, you know, taught English in Japan for a number of years. And she, of course, is quite upset by this. And we all are. We all are.
Simply put, the greatest calamity in known history, mm-hmm. as far as man is concerned. Now, before, there may have been others, not nuclear power plant, but cataclysms of geology. And That's the issue. This is our Halloween night, and for all of you on the West Coast who are out with your kiddies, you'll be able to listen to the program, perhaps when you come back, or any time at all if you're a subscriber, of course. And we welcome you to take a look at the wonderful art entries this year. Mm-hmm. I was, as you know, a little concerned early on that the depressed economy and the general malaise and unhappiness had kind of sapped some of the energy of our contributing artists. But there was a rush and they came through with some beauties. And
yes,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we devote this entire program to this excitement, and I think, and I know you agree, we'll take time to look at each of the art pieces. We'll take time to look at each of the stories.
Indeed.
We have quite a range of creativity and talent and some downright spooky stories and some, as you said, marvelous art pieces.
Yeah.
And I think they each deserve their due, and I know you vigorously agree with me.
There's one in there that's pretty weird. It's got a mask of me. I don't know what to say about that, except I'm torn between either throwing it in the trash or printing it out and putting it on the wall.
Right. I can see where there would be that dichotomy and that ambivalence, so looking at that if it were I. The other one that I was kind of amused at, and Sherry...
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's ghost or visiting Brad.
Uh-huh.
So now that's definitely you, not I. And so we're trying to figure out if I am the monsters coming to scare you, or if I'm... Sherry said, well, you're obviously the wolf man. Everyone knows how you're crazy about werewolves. So I said, well, could be, but...
A funny one.
Yeah,
they're in the radio studio.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute. Now, the radio studio has a very interesting microphone in there. I don't know how many of you remember back, but... Before the box-shaped classic RCA 44BX mics in the 30s and 40s, and you've all seen them. In fact, Glenn Beck is using one now. He had one restored, and it's a gorgeous, beautiful work of art, except Glenn doesn't know how to use it. You're supposed to stay back 12 to 18 inches. He's trying to eat it, and he wants that big bass.
No comment.
Yeah. And... But you can see, if you look at Beck, unless he's switched mics several times, but he keeps going back to the 44. It's a magnificent mic. Now, in that art piece, I'm at the desk with the radio
right. And
the equipment, and the mic is a predecessor. That's a spring microphone from 1910, 1915. That's the era. I have
probably the 30th at the latest, huh?
At the latest. No, they had better than that. That was the teens and early 20s, the spring mic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got little springs on it holding the little carbon, I don't know what it is, in the center that picked up the vibration of the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really quite gorgeous. They're nickel-plated, and I have one somewhere.
So it says Brad's surprised guest. So Sherry interpreted as, these are my guests coming to visit you. Or, we have melded into one.
Well, there's that too. and then there's the other one where Jeff and Brad are chasing the feared ones down the street.
Right. Got a kick out of that. And I think it's the same, it's the same three. Frankenstein, werewolf, and the count. What was that?
A werewolf.
I think so. Well, I hope our werewolf doesn't hear that, and he'll chime in. So. Anyway, we can talk about each of the art pieces. We can do that after our first guest, who is the inimitable Dr. Franklin Rule.
He is inimitable. Thank goodness.
He is definitely one of a kind. And he's been a loyal friend for many years. I'm just thinking now, goodness, I've known Franklin for like 30 years or more. How fast time goes. In fact, Sherry always teases that we had Franklin along on our honeymoon, which isn't quite true.
Oh, good Lord. Well, you needed a videographer, I understand. That's all right.
She's in the background saying, it's true, Jeff, it's true. The actual story is we left the day, well, the morning after our wedding, I guess, to speak at a big conference in Los Angeles. But I went on ahead by half a day or so to do some PR in the area, to do some media. And Franklin picked me up, and I was on his program. But the thing, that was the same day the big earthquake hit. And I'll never forget coming into LAX and seeing the runway actually ripple like waves. I mean, I didn't think that was possible. But we were coming down, and all of a sudden the runway rippled, and then the pilot took right off again, and we circled until we thought it was safe. So
you actually could see it rippling.
Yeah, yeah. I'll never forget it. I mean, it was just rippling. So again, all the studios that we went to that day, you know, there were either cracks in the walls or the stairs were, I mean, elevators all out of order, of course. And then the aftershock, Sherry and I were in our room, I think we're on the 17th, 18th floor. And being that high when an aftershock occurs made me yearn for the plains of my birth.
The plane, coming to Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island.
We're gonna stay right here through this break. We've got things to do.
Oh, okay.
Franklin
I
is
heard
coming.
The music, so
yeah, well, that's
got
all
cut
right.
It short.
A little bit of a fake out there. For all of you again who are with us, we do this once a year, and it always amazes at how quickly it does show up. And every year, it seems like I go looking for a book, and I can't find it every year. And I never remember to look for it until we're just about to go on the air. And I found it this year. I got lucky. There were many years when I couldn't find it. It gets dark in the house, and you can understand this. I don't have a lot of lights in my home. I like it kind of dark.
I wonder why.
Ah, yes. Now, I'm going to read a poem. It's a little Halloween poem.
Okay.
If that's all right.
That's fine.
It's not well known. It's a nice poem, though. I like it. It has to do with a tree.
Okay.
I like trees.
I do too.
All right.
Who doesn't?
Oh, who doesn't? There are some people who don't. Loggers don't. Well, maybe some do.
They like them in a perverse way.
Yes, you might say that. Kind of like a chainsaw way.
Right. The way vampires love beauty queens.
Say that again? That's what I thought you said.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not only to look at, but to drink from, you know. So they not only love the tree and the smell and everything, but it's also their living. So it's, you know, sustenance.
Okay.
That was pretty heavy.
The way vampires love beauty queens, that's... The way lumberjacks...
Well, the neck is there, so inviting.
Yeah,
cannot see the beauty, but by the same token, the guy has to eat. So likewise with the lumberjack, they see the beautiful trees, but they have to eat. It's that mixed. You know, we have that dichotomy in all of life, if you stop to think about it. You know, it's with us always, that moment of decision. The moment of... What is more important at the second? We're living in the moment, even though we're more in the past with our consciousness than we are in the present, or we're not in the future. But even in the present, then, we put romanticism away, and we have
oh, have we ever.
Survival.
Well, romanticism used to be reflected in poetry and great writing, mm-hmm. and, of course, mm-hmm. painting, and, above all, music, the voice of the universe.
Right.
Okay, here's my little poem. Silence, please. The name of this house is the Jarbo House. J-A-R-B-O-E. It's the name of a family. Now, you're going to hear that word.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Away beyond the Jarboe house, I saw a different kind of tree. Its trunk was old and large and bent, and I could feel it looking at me. The road was going on and on, beyond to reach some other place. I saw a tree that looked at me, and yet it didn't have a face. It looked at me with all its limbs. It looked at me with all its bark. The yellow wrinkles on its sides were old and bent and dark. And then I ran to get away. But when I stopped to turn and see, the tree was bending to the side and leaning out to look at me. Kind of a fun thing. It's a nighttime thing. Nighttime.
That's the end, yeah. Interesting.
I should have said the end.
Right. Since we can't.
Like they did in second grade.
Right.
The end.
The end. There we are. Well, that's interesting. And certainly, growing up, I've always been fascinated with trees. And I know Sherry is also a tree lover. And we have some magnificent ones in our yard outside the castle. And, you know, here again, the pareidolia. You know, we all see faces in the bark. I mean, I guess I can't say all
you
of
can,
them.
You can see almost anything you want in the bark.
Exactly.
If your mind is still alive.
That's right. Or, you know, primed for that. And, of course, one of our basic survival mechanism is that we see faces. We must see faces. Is that a lion in the bush, or, you know, is that a loved one in the traffic walking on the street? So pareidolia then is that instinct, that compulsion to see faces and everything. And if
is that the word?
The bark of a tree, you know.
Is that the word? Is that the word?
Pareidolia.
I don't know that word.
Yeah, it's seeing faces, seeing, you know, in shadows, in clouds, in bark, and seeing the Virgin Mary on the piece.
I get it.
Yeah.
It's an Italian word, pareidolia. And yeah, I thought it meant if you had two girlfriends.
Well,
never mind. You got to think about it a little bit there.
Right.
All right. Pareidolia, seeing faces in otherwise inanimate objects.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I wonder what Dr. Rule would have to say about that.
Oh, I know he would agree with that. He's a very... Now, we should mention, you know, for all the people who are going to want medical attention, Dr. Rule is not a medical doctor. He is a...
Medical attention due to the program or due to his appearance on the program?
Well, because they'll hear him and they'll realize this is a man they could trust and they could rely on. So, but he is a nuclear physicist. So it's in physics.
Now, this is the real deal.
This is a real deal, yeah. He has two PhDs.
Dr. Rule has two PhDs in physics and in...
Nuclear physics.
Nuclear physics.
Mm-hmm.
And in...
Nuclear physics.
I thought you said he had two.
Yeah.
I get it. He has a degree in nuclear physics and a degree in nuclear physics. Now it makes sense.
Right.
Is that
like
anything?
Majoring in English and being a doctor in English, but not a medical doctor.
Well, I got that much, but how does he have two PhDs in the same thing?
We'll have to ask him.
He actually says this?
Yeah.
He sure it isn't embroidery he has a degree in?
Oh, no. I say, he knows the cosmos. He knows the universe.
Oh, he's pretty cosmic, all right.
That's right.
Yeah, well.
That's right.
Dr.
I
Rule.
I have come to learn over the years that there is virtually no end to his talents or his field of knowledge.
Or? That pretty well sums it up.
What
if there's no end to his
watch for Halloween?
He's going to see a revival later tonight,
yes.
Right?
Right. He needs to get off at a certain time to see Vincent Price in Mask of the Red Death.
Yes. Classic. Yeah. Well, Dr. Ruhl will be joining us in about 7 or 8 minutes, something like that. So he is no doubt standing by or sitting by with bated breath. We don't know what he uses for bait, but we're assumed he's ready to go.
He is prepared. He is always prepared.
Now,
kind of the ultimate Boy Scout, always prepared.
There's only one Dr. Ruhl, that's for sure. The thing about Dr. Ruhl is he might as well have a PhD in Hollywood history because he knows
right.
He knows more about Hollywood and the movies than anyone I know, except you.
I used to think that I had that crown, but over the years, he stumped me more than once, so I've had to concede that to Dr. Ruhl.
We should also mention David D's Halloween splash art, which will be supplanted later tonight with the winner of our contest, but David worked hard on that, and the message is one of microwave cell phone towers, which are often hidden among either real or fake palm trees, and little children who end up paying the price with their little cell phones. And unfortunately, this is all true. And
yes, tell us, please, what's on nostril and cheek of the little boys there?
Those are oxygen tanks. They're on chemotherapy.
Ah, okay.
They're all little cancer kids.
Okay.
Because when you put that little cell phone up to your...
Lost hair and the circle under the eyes, of course.
The message is... Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
The message is, parents, don't buy your children cell phones when they're 7 and 8 and 9 years old. Please.
Lord.
Their little brains are not even grown. And here you are dosing them with microwave radiation, and that is tragically what happens to some children. Now, some are lucky enough and they get away with it. And the little kid in the background, of course, is dressed up in a fake palm tree, but in the typical sign of the times, the costume has the broadcast outlets for the EMF. That's what those vertical items are. You've seen them probably around. They hide these things in everywhere. Hide church steeples in the top of a supermarket. They'll put them anywhere. And you say to yourself, well, how can this be? The answer is money. Money. Just pay. And they get it all back.
Money behind it all.
AntennaLocator.com. AntennaLocator.com. Pretty sure that's what it is. If you go there, type in your street address, you will see how many antennae are located within a stone's throw often of your house, and it is shocking. They are everywhere. AntennaLocator.com. Take a look. You might be wanting to move.
Sherry's already typing that out.
All right. Well, let me know what she finds. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back with Dr. Franklin Ruhl and find out how he has a double PhD in nuclear physics and more in just a couple. Have something more appropriate.
That's it for now. Until next time, sleep well. If you can.
Of course, we're just getting warmed up here, but we had to have the voice of Joss on Halloween. He has one of the greats. Have you talked to Joss lately?
No. Is he still with us? bless
I don't know. I thought he was working and doing gardening for you.
Oh, we had to let him go.
He couldn't climb the trees?
Well, he smoking too much.
Oh, God.
Butts in the azaleas and the carrots.
That's where you get that voice. You know, I have, and we've talked about this, I've known people in broadcasting who yearn for a deep voice like you have, Lord Bradley. And what do they do?
Deliberately smoke, don't they?
They'd smoke chains if they could light them. They chain smoke. They drink liquor. I'm not joking.
No, I know. I know them. I know some people like that.
And unfortunately, it works.
Unfortunately, a number of actors, too, do the same thing.
Yeah.
Their voice that way.
Yep. All right, let's let you introduce Dr. Ruhl, R-U-E-H-L, to our esteemed audience and find out what kind of a mood he's in tonight.
Well, I know he's going to be in a super mood because tonight is Halloween. He's probably been out trick-or-treating, and he's getting ready to watch some of his classic favorite horror films. And Dr. Ruhl, as I said, was saying in the previous segment, has been a friend for many, many years. And who better to call on Halloween to discuss some of the classic Halloween horror films or films to see on Halloween and to just catch up on things in the other dominion. Are you there, Franklin?
Yes, I am. Thank you for inviting me tonight.
Well, it seemed natural to invite you tonight because we knew you would be super psyched for Halloween.
I am. Of course, things have changed a little. I wasn't out trick-or-treating, but I was talking to a friend today earlier. I used to go out as many...
You have a friend this year, Franklin? This is good. Last year wasn't quite so... Anyway, go ahead.
In any event, I would go out as a kid up to three times filling up a shopping bag with goodies. We didn't have plastic bags in those days, but he said he went out with a pillowcase and was unable to fill it, so it was too large.
Pillowcase.
Yes, I never heard of that before.
No.
But
we had a discussion, Franklin. You're going to have to settle this for me. I said you had two PhDs. Now, was I correct or not?
No, just one PhD.
Oh, where did I get you had two?
I don't know.
I guess it's just that you're that brilliant. Okay, Jeff, I stand corrected. One
was
PhD.
Was there a wager involved?
That's all right.
In nuclear physics, though, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm half right, you know.
Right.
What can you do? Half right is better than completely wrong.
Franklin, you may have a degree in nuclear physics, but your telephone sounds like Alexander Graham Bell's throwaway.
Well, I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
I think what I'd like to do is let's have you hang up, Franklin. I'm going to call you right back. Okay? Let's try that
because
it's got a buzz and Franklin doesn't sound really sharp and crisp and clear like we know him to be.
Like he always is. Okay, I think he hung up.
All right, well, we are going to wait and see if we get him back, because Brett's going to dial him right now. All right.
That was a terrible buzz. I thought he was in a spaceship. He might have been.
Well, he might have been easily in a spaceship. I mean, he's got a friend this year, too, which is very nice. That's always helpful.
That is always helpful.
He's back.
We
Let's see how
friends.
He sounds. All right, Franklin, say something.
Can you hear me?
Not much better. We got to turn Franklin up real loud and ask Franklin to get right down on that receiver, Franklin, and talk right into it.
Okay, I'm talking right into it.
There.
You guys, I hear you perfectly.
Yeah, you're coming in much better now, Franklin.
Okay. I have a trivia question for you. Is it too early to open it up?
Why not? Go open it up.
Okay, I'm going to extract it from its paper prison here. The question, what is the technical term for one who fears cats? Meow. Multiple choice, inverse alphabetical order. Is that a spexophobia, is that ophidiophobia, hippophobia, or allurophobia, the fear of cats. Now, the prize, the only prize, is one pat on the back that you'll have to administer to yourself. Heck of a lot better than a slap on the belly with a wet trout. Now, what's your answer, Brad?
Aurorophobia.
What's that?
Aurorophobia.
Okay, and how about you, Jeff?
All right, and the question is again?
What is the fear of cats? Spexophobia, ophidiophobia, hippophobia, or allurophobia?
The last one.
You're correct, Brad. Give yourself a pat on the back. For the record,
I already have.
I didn't know the answer to that. I wouldn't
okay.
have gotten that.
Well, you should have guessed. You had one in four chance. Anyway, for the record, spexophobia, the fear of wasps, ophidiophobia, fear of snakes, and hippophobia, fear of horses, just in case you're taking notes.
I'm recording this for posterity.
Okay, great. Now, I mentioned the fear of cats because that ties in with Val Lewton, who created eight classic horror films. You know him from RKO? Val Lewton?
Say the name again,
sound
please.
Familiar?
Val?
Say the
yes,
name again.
Val?
Val Lewton. V-A-L.
Oh, okay. The cat people and
heritage.
So
but he created some of the classics at RKO, including Cat People, but intriguingly, he was an allurophobe. He was terrified of cats.
That's why he made them those films so gripping.
That's
the cat
right. Now,
people, you know, Cat People is always one that intrigues me because I expect so much more from that and from Val, you know, and I know this is one of his classics, and I have written about it in books of my own about how it's a classic, but it's one I think is really overrated, in my opinion. I don't think it really... didn't really grab me, and I've probably seen it three times waiting to be grabbed.
Only three times?
I think some of his other films, you know, have greater impact.
Well, let me say what you may be drawing upon. We have Simone Simone, who, if kissed by a man, will turn into a Black Panther, not actually
right.
a kitty cat.
Okay.
Now, three times in the film, she was supposed to make that transformation. But
right.
we never saw her, except...
No.
At the
and
very
I want
end.
To see her turn.
And one, we just saw her shadow. A second time, her image appeared on the wall of a gymnasium swimming pool as she was terrorizing a rival, love rival, Jane Randolph. And the third time, when Tom Conway, the psychiatrist, was about to kiss her because he didn't believe she could change into a cat, her face
right.
darkened a bit, but that was all. They never showed her make the actual transformation. And then in the end, the hero and heroine said there she wasn't lying. She's lying on the ground, but we really didn't see what was lying on the ground.
No.
They just,
no.
You know, because
I just thought, you know, it just didn't deliver. But now the remake of the Cat People... We couldn't complain we didn't see people changing into Black Panthers there. That,
right, they,
that
had,
was really...
they had larger budgets then. But
that's
I really
right.
like the black and white classic. They have that film noir quality. I was going to also mention that in that we had Tom Conway playing Dr. Lewis Judd, who was killed at the end of the movie.
Right.
He's a psychiatrist who is trying to treat her. But in the very next movie that he made, The Seventh Victim, Lewis Judd is back, perfectly healthy, playing a psychiatrist again, the same actor
mm-hmm.
Tom Conway. And I felt they should have changed his name. Why did they use the same
yeah,
name?
Yeah,
to
this? Yeah.
Right.
Now,
do you remember The Seventh Victim? The Seventh Victim
well, now,
is...
Go ahead.
Is, I think
go ahead.
One of his best. It dealt with a devil cult, and they mm-hmm. were going to execute... the actress Jean Brooks, because they felt betrayed them by revealing their secrets to Tom Conway, the psychiatrist.
Not nice.
But they revealed her in a room, and she was ordered to drink a glass of poison. And she kept refusing to do it. But the actress, Isabel Jewell, who's her good friend, suddenly started screaming, "I can't take the stress anymore. Drink it, drink it." So she was about to drink it when Isabel knocked the glass from her face and said, "No, I can't let you die." A very dramatic scene. She deserved an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress, I thought, for that role. But, of course, for low-budget films, I never consider them. Do you remember that scene at all?
No, no.
Seventh Victim is sometimes shown on Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah. Tom Conway, of course, was one of those reliable character actors. Always delivered, always did a great job.
Well, one of the B-movie greats, right?
Right, absolutely.
Now, you know who his brother was?
Don't tell
Jeff
me it was
Conway.
Tim.
What'd you
Jeff
say,
Conway.
Brad?
Well, you got Tim Conway and you got Jeff Conway.
Tom Conway, who's well-known actor was his brother?
Wasn't it Jeff Conway?
No, the age difference is way too much. That would be son or something.
Yeah.
All right, we give up, Franklin.
Actor.
Who?
Well-known actor. Should I give you any hint? Because
give us his initials.
Give us a hint.
Okay. His initials were G.S.
G.S.?
Yes.
Gertrude Schneider?
No.
This is a man.
Gary Schneider, excuse me. No. Gary Schneider.
Well,
no.
You're not talking about George C. Scott.
Okay, you're a little closer.
Well, I got
tell
the George
us,
right.
Tell us, please.
Okay, shall I just tell you?
Yes.
George Saunders was his brother.
Oh, I have George Saunders.
Oh, yeah, I
didn't
know
that. That's amazing.
I was born in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Uh-huh.
And interestingly, they appeared in two movies together. The one was the Falcon's brother. George Saunders had played the role three times, and he was tired of it. He was so he asked that his brother be used to replace him. So that was actually the movie, The Falcon's Brother, where George Saunders is actually killed in that episode, and Tom vows to take up where he left off and did an excellent job in 10 episodes as the Falcon.
There's a
George
book.
Saunders is an actor I really miss. I mean,
oh,
no
he is
one,
fabulous.
No one could do snarky the way he did.
Nobody. Nobody. Vincent Price tried and came kind of close on, once in a while. But there's a book out about George Saunders. Do you know this, Franklin? There's
no.
A book. You should look this
so,
book
but
up.
I didn't read it.
You know what it's called? I'll tell you what it's called. It's called A Dreadful Man.
Love it.
Well, he had some excellent roles where he, for example, I thought his best role probably was in Death of a Scoundrel, if you've seen that, which included his beloved Zsa Gabor, as you may know. She said he was the man she truly loved, even though they divorced twice.
That's right.
And as
kind
you
like
may,
and Taylor.
May know, he committed suicide. He wrote a suicide note, said that he's bored with life.
Mm-hmm.
And, he said something to the effect that I leave you all to your pitiful little sewer or something like that. No, it was rather sardonic.
Was something like that. Pitiful little lives or pitiful little...
He died in Paris, I think. Killed himself in somewhere in Europe.
And sadly, Tom Conway, the last we heard of him, he had become an alcoholic on Skid Row in Los Angeles before he died.
Oh, gee.
And he had such an elegant voice, a great presence. Not a mean, he never made it to the A-list, probably.
But you'd think he could have done radio, voiceover work back then, something, commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
He had,
but
as
they
say,
great
a set of pipes.
And he's a handsome man, too. I always liked him.
Yeah, he was,
no, I just wanted to mention the other Val Lewton films because he had the classics, The Body Snatcher with Karloff and Lugosi, Bedlam, mm-hmm. Isle of the Dead, The Leopard Man, Curse of the Cat People, and The Ghost Ship. Now, The Ghost Ship is a little annoying to me. It starred Richard Dix. We expect with Val Lewton, a movie entitled The Ghost Ship, to have phantoms aboard.
Well,
there were
something.
No ghosts. In fact, the only reference to The Ghost Ship was made because he was a tyrannical captain and caused two of his sailors to die, that his girlfriend in port told him if he continues to act so tyrannical, it will be as though he's the captain of a ghost ship. But no ghost thing. In The Ghost Ship.
That's cheap advertising.
Very disappointing.
A little bit of a stretch. No, no.
We also had that in 1941, the Bela Lugosi film Invisible Ghost, where his wife had disappeared. She had lost her memory, but she was never a ghost and never invisible. So another disappointment. We hear a Bela Lugosi movie entitled The Invisible Ghost should have some phantoms in it, I believe.
It certainly should. It certainly should.
Those
well,
were, no, those were
like that with the B-movies.
Weren't those the East Side Kids, Franklin? They weren't phantoms.
He had two movies with them.
I know. Nobody knows that. Nobody even knows who the East Side Kids were.
Yeah, well, they became the Bowery Boys.
I never missed them. My grandpa would take me to the double features in the big city near our little village, and we would see the East Side Kids, Leo Gorcey,
the Hans guy, Hall.
Hans Hall. Hans Hall lived beyond Leo and starred in some other television, no, not starred, but was in some television series, as I recall.
I think
he looked so much different, but yet he looked the same, but he just looked stouter, I guess, more mature.
But again, the East Side Kids became the Bowery Boys.
Right.
And I think they, I'm not sure, I think they made over 100 films total.
They were a lot
In demand during the war years and after, I guess, right?
Right.
Okay,
and of course, that's when I saw them, you know, and I really knew them as the Bowery Boys. I didn't see them as the East Kids until
and now. Before that,
the,
they were
the
what?
Ones with Bogart. I saw them with Bogart when they did
right.
What were they known as before the Bowery Boys? The East Side
Kids.
Kids
or East Side Kids.
Before that,
East Side Kids.
The Little Rascals. Same guys.
No, they weren't the Little Rascals.
No, no.
They
just kidding, Franklin. Just a little joke.
No.
Now, let's
you're talking to movie buffs here.
There is no joking. All right. We got to pull out the A-list. Now, let's talk about some people that our younger audience may recognize. Some names. Drop some names. George Sanders.
Let's talk about Bela Lugosi. I have a factoid that I'd like to mention.
All right.
Of course, he was fortunate enough to get the role of Dracula, which he had played on stage. But going back to 1922, we had our first version of Dracula, the son of Nosferatu, with Max Schreck. But they did not ever call him Dracula,
mm-hmm.
and Nosferatu means the undead. But he was playing Count Orlok. But in the final scene, he's just bitten the heroine in her bed. And we see his reflection clearly in the mirror above that bed.
Wait a minute.
Right.
Wait a minute. What has heroin got to do with this? Is this a drug movie?
No, heroin. The heroine who sacrifices herself so
the
that he will
lady.
Die.
I got
and
it.
Because he spent so much time biting her, he didn't realize that dawn occurred. And as soon as it was light, he vanished. I think it went a little too fast. As soon as the light went through the window and hit him, he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, that was...
But that was all because of a lawsuit. You know, there
yeah, well, they had
no
a lawsuit. They had to delay that movie, and they still had to pay, even because they stole that from Bram Stoker's widow at the time was suing them.
Exactly. So that it wouldn't have been Nosferatu.
Wait a minute.
It just would have been Dracula.
Bram Stoker's widow was suing during the making of Dracula?
During the making of
Nosferatu,
because they were using
Nosferatu, the original one.
Paying for the rights.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking that would be a little late, the 1930s. 31, I think.
No, this is 22.
I understand, but the Dracula movie with Bela Lugosi was 1931.
Right, there was no problem. Now, let's fast forward to 1948, and we have Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which I saw for the first time on a Halloween night on TV. That was some years ago.
That was actually kind of a fun movie.
That was a great movie. It rained that day. It rained that day, so we got to go to the movie. Otherwise, we were right in the middle of harvest time. It was in a nearby village, and I said, can't we go? Well, we had to get up, and then it rained. The voices, the powers above heard me in rain, so I got to go see Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
But you got all wet, Brad.
No. We do have automobiles then, so we didn't have to go in the horse and buggy.
Anyway, with the Abbott and Costello movie, he was playing Baron Lottos, and reincarnation of Dracula. In one scene, the female doctor, who suddenly started to refuse to obey him, he wanted her to transplant Costello's brain into the monster's body to make him more intelligent. Now, she was refusing to cooperate after she had been cooperative. He then was hypnotizing her in front of a mirror where his mirror reflection was clearly seen. And this is Universal, still the same company that told us in 1931 that vampires did not cast any reflections in a mirror.
A little bit of an error there.
And I don't know how they could have made it, because you think someone would have seen that in the rushes.
Didn't the monster pick her up and throw her out the window?
Yeah. That was Glenn Strange who was playing the monster in that. And, of course, we had Lon Chaney... portraying his role as the Wolfman.
At the very end,
you probably remember we heard a voice. It was Vincent Price, the Invisible Man.
The Invisible Man. The gang's all there. Okay, folks out there, who was the original?
I just want to say this about that movie. Lugosi's agent promised the role to him. When he went to Universal, they wanted to use John Carradine, who had essayed the role of Dracula in the two previous movies, House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula. He put them to shame. He said, you made millions on that. You paid him very little. You owe him this role. And he got it. And Lugosi really enjoyed playing in this film with Abbott and Costello.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting little note.
Was okay.
Nah, how dare anyone try to follow the footsteps of that guy, Bela. The great film, of course, is, if you haven't seen it, is Ed Wood with Johnny Depp. You both have seen that.
Oh, yes.
You're a great film.
Martin Landau did an excellent job as Bela.
Martin Landau was magnificent in there.
Yeah.
Didn't he win an Oscar for that?
Mm-hmm.
Best Supporting Actor, something.
He did.
Who was the original, that's for our audience, who was the original Invisible Man? Who played the original Invisible Man in the Hollywood Universal film, I guess?
That brilliant British actor.
Yeah, he was way underrated. Claude Rains.
Yeah, I was waiting for Claude to say it, but, Franklin, Claude is our private name between each other.
Right.
I'm Wolfman and he's Claw, so we let it slip. They know our secret, Franklin.
That's fine. I was going to say that was as far as we know.
Claude Rains, anyway. They were waiting
the very
for
the first film version of An Invisible Man, 1931.
Yeah.
You think they would have done it in the silent period, but apparently did not.
No. But I knew Jeff was waiting for an answer, so I thought I better say Claude Rains there.
Okay.
I was waiting for you to jump in.
Well, I was waiting for, you said, let's ask our audience, so.
Oh, okay.
I'm just such
a glory hog when it comes to movie trivia, I just couldn't control myself.
Okay. Say, I wanted to ask, now, you mentioned this about the black cat, the cat people, that you thought they could have added more, and I agree, we should have seen her actually transform into a creature.
Yes, they could have done it. They could have faked it. They had the facility to make us believe.
Now, let's forward to Curse of the Demon, 1957, with Dana Andrews involved.
That's
not a bell ringer.
Never seen it. It came on the other night.
Yeah.
I'm saying, you've never seen Curse of the Demon. This is a classic. One of my favorite actors, Dana Andrews. And our television went boom.
I was
grousing all night long.
Well, we'll see. All right, hold on a minute. We've got to take a break.
Franklin.
Yeah, hold on. We'll come back and spend a couple more minutes. Franklin, I will ask when we come back to assay very quickly the best films he's seen this year. And he's quite the film buff, so we'll see what he says. Hold on, and we'll be right back on this Halloween evening as we continue.